Alderman Walczewski, Alderman Clocher, Alderman Funkhauser, Alderman Hernandez, and staff.
15 minutes.
No citizens' comments because nobody's here. Minutes for correction slash approval from October 18th, 2017. Comments or questions on minutes? Okay, so we'll just accept them as presented. Let's go into new business. One, admin 2017-79, the monthly budget report for October 2017.
Well, we hit the six-month mark, so some of these line items, you can kind of take that benchmark, some of which might still get shuffled around a little bit as we, proceed forward in the fiscal year. Our sales tax numbers, that's 4030 municipal sales tax. The 260 number in there for October 17th was 4% up over October of 2016. Which is good, because I think we had budgeted for like a 3% increase. Year-to-date, though, we had 1 month where we had, I think it's the month of September, where it's 274. That month is typically one of our higher months. We have two peaks in the year, and I think last year that one was close to 300. The interesting thing, though, is each of our other months have actually been ahead of schedule. So I'm wondering if maybe in 2016 there wasn't just some spike related to construction, like a large building project that went through or something, or somebody bought some expensive jewelry somewhere. I don't know. You know, something that generates a lot of sales tax all of a sudden. Yeah. And so, you know, everything else is relatively in line. And honestly, 274 isn't that far off from like historical average. It's just much lower than before. So, I mean, we're still on track to meet our budget number, just compared to what we actually did last year. That only ends up being like a 2% increase. So, still good, but, it wasn't the 6% that we saw last year. The one that's off the chart, so this is going to be your November one, was $253,000, which is closer to normal. It was, I think, 5 or 6% year-over-year growth, and was right on target with what we had expected. So it's moderated a little bit. So we just got to watch it going forward. And then if anybody else has any questions about the expenditures, I'm happy to take them too.
Any comments, questions? Okay.
All right, beginning fund balance of $13,642,346. Year-to-date revenues of $17,945,688. Year-to-date expenses of $15,142,578 for a projected ending fund balance of $16,445,456.
Let's go to admin 2017-81, the cash statement for September 2017.
This is just informational as always. Cash balances on the first on the front page, and our investment balances on the second page.
Comments or questions on cash statement? Okay, we're good. For admin 2017-82, bills for payment. Any comments or questions on the bills? Okay, we're good. Okay, let's go with 5, admin 2017-83, monthly website report for October 2017.
It's in there, of note, I think it's the third page, the top 5 downloads our sod watering permit, so our sod watering band came and went and people were worked up about it. And then the purchase agreement for the Ron Clark Park is there too. So,
yeah, well,
not surprising if you were at that meeting.
Right.
And then just our Facebook, we're continuing to increase followers. We've rolled out a function. It's an automatic post now. Thursday, when all the packets get published, we've got a link to all of them saying like, hey, we've got meetings next week. Here's the link to all of them. And then we've made it a point the day of the meeting, too, in the morning, to just say, like, hey, we've got admin committee tonight. Here's the meeting packet in case people want to do it. Have not checked the actual data on that to see how it compares, but anecdotally, I know Joel had said that, I think it is Whispering Meadows Facebook group or something, there was a bunch of people that they had caught wind of some agenda item and they were discussing it, and then they like called him about it. So that seemed exciting to me. I don't know. And then the city Twitter data is on there too. That's down. We really haven't been posting on there much. We used to pair it what we would do with Facebook. Is that something we gotta get back up on? So that's usually in my court. So Erin has taken over everything, but she's kind of ignored that because I usually don't Twitter. But my guess is I'll probably give that.
Now, did you say you would pair it or pair it?
Pair it. As in her. As in like call and response. Although I think pair it works too. Yeah, there we go. That's what
are you pairing it with it, or is it pair it doesn't? Yeah. Sorry.
Last time I was telling you, we used at school, and I couldn't remember, it's called Hootsuite.
Yeah, to do the dual.
You put it on one, and it actually goes on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And you can determine if you want it to go to all
of them. Oh, yeah. So then, we've been doing that. We've upped it at school.
And it works good.
Yeah, it seems to be doing good.
Okay.
Hootsuite's it's a good tool. The one thing I mean... I don't particularly like, but I don't know how you guys handle social media, but for me, social media is social. The programming posts is not social.
Right.
It's pushing your audience away.
Sure.
I think, for me, I'd rather see somebody actually be social and do the posts and interact with these, in this case, our citizens.
Sure.
That respond and talk, you know. Otherwise, you know, because when I do my posts, social media posts, it's always... I go to everyone. I go to Twitter, I go to Facebook, I go to Google Plus, I go to everything, and I post right there. It takes me 10 minutes per every article that I write, but it's worth it. And then I can go back, and when people respond, I can reply. Otherwise, people know that businesses and other people use automated postings.
Sure.
And it sometimes becomes so frequent that it kind of turns people off. At least that's the way I felt.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with Hootsuite. It's a good tool.
It's been working because...
Yeah. But I also do like... I would prefer to see somebody behind the screen rather than an automated bot. Just
well, we have to have... I mean, we have a person that does it. She has to create it. And,
right.
You know.
To your point, I know that when I was running both, like a couple years ago, whenever we would do something on Facebook, which may be more form-based and impersonal, but then with Twitter, because of the character limit, I would always say, like, hey, we're doing this, and here's the link to it, or whatever. So that type of a thing, I think, is what you're talking about, where it's a little bit more custom, and then there's follow-up. So,
because I know, you know, from my kids being up in Bristol Bay, I get the Facebook, I get the tweet, and there's an email. And they are all the same.
Yep.
You know, so it's it's designed for the lowest common denominator of what content you can put in, and then the links, and they're all the same, basically.
Sure.
Now, you might get something a little different, but there's also
nothing wrong, and there's nothing wrong with using those tools. Right. But what would be, I don't know if we do it or not, but what would be cool is schedule important posts or announcements, but also have somebody out there posting just cool.
Yeah.
There could be some other things.
Sorry.
One of them has a different following to an extent.
Yep.
It's not the
same
person. I'm not going to follow the city on Facebook, Twitter, and you know everything else. It may be one or the other, couple of them. Yeah. And that's how it is.
Have the other
that's kind of what we look at. Yeah. You know, like we have Pie Pickup. You know, hey, it's just a blast. Yeah. Remember Pie Pickup. Whatever.
Did you move to Pie Pickup because the pies weren't done this year? No.
Leaf pickup joke. No, I know. I'm very proud of you guys in your leaf pickup this year.
Hey, so far so good.
I've only had
one pick.
Everything's cooperated. We moved it back.
It's good.
We're just going to keep running.
So I wasn't allowed to leave mine out on there. The wife was not pleased.
Oh.
Too much potential rain and freeze. And she's like, I'm not taking a chance with them.
Yeah.
Do you guys...
in front of my house.
Yeah.
Do you track your refers? As to what, you know, because I see a high infidelity .com as a refer, and I'm just curious as to
what they are.
You know, I just Googled them and I
oh, they're band.
They are our premier cover band.
Yeah.
Days for 10 years in a row.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. main event.
Awesome.
We did actually look into the Bing registration.
Yeah, that all of a sudden fall.
I don't know that they did it yet, but I know Erin had looked at it, that she was going to do it.
That interests me because Google is, you know, the most popular search engine,
sure.
And it's interesting that Bing is one of our top preferers instead of Google. Which makes me happy because I use Bing.
So maybe it's you.
No, I only come to our website, that website, when I
accidentally.
No, yeah. when I come to the meetings or when I need to look at packets, and I've already got it bookmarked. So.
Oh, there you go.
So, anything else on that one? All right, let's go on to 7, admin 2017-85, facilities manager intergovernmental. No, I'm sorry. 6. Right. Admin 2017-84. I crossed it off already. Sorry. Ordinance amending city procurement code.
Yeah, so the current code matches state level, which is $20,000 and above, requires a city council bid or sole source supermajorities, we discussed last night. And anything below $20,000 is basically up to whatever procurement ordinance you have, which is in our city code. So generally, that's staff authorization, though. So the state finally updated it for the first time in 20 years. I don't even know when the last time it was updated. Increased it from $20,000 to $25,000. So we wanted to mimic that. That way it's easy to remember. You know, I can think of probably a dozen times, probably in the last 10 years or something, that we've had an issue at city council level where we've authorized something that's, you know, $15,000 to $20,000. Kind of mocks at it, so it hasn't run into an issue. Is it?
Yeah. It's like whistle.
Well, that was one of them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I guess, in fairness, most of them were probably, you know, during the recession or pre-recession. During the recession, middle of it, we didn't have a whole lot of money, so everything was scrutinized. And so that's the request, is to just meet it. And so originally, Andy was working on a full procurement ordinance, and it was like 30 pages long. We're still doing that. That'll come forward probably at the start of the new fiscal year. That'll have conversation about like local bidding preference or registration, you know, how we generate like vendor scorecards. She's big on like, you know, you rate somebody afterwards, how well they did, if they actually provided it like they said they would, you know, on time, and all those other things that will tighten up our internal process, other than just like if it's between $5,000 and $25,000, you have to like call 3 people and ask them for it. So we're in favor of that. It's just when you started to dive into it, I was like, well, so I said, let's get this moving forward, and then do that in the next couple months.
Comments or questions on this?
I don't favor it. I think it's fine where it's at. I know we can up it just to mimic state law, but if we did everything that the state allowed, we'd all be breaking the law in some way or another. It's legally. So I don't see the necessity to increase it, and so I'm not going to support it.
Anybody else? Okay. So I take it, we'll move that out to the regular agenda. So now let's go to 7, Admin 2017-85, Facilities Manager Intergovernmental Agreement.
Okay, this was part of our budget proposal. It is a shared employee with Oswego, similar to the purchasing manager, but instead it would handle all of our facility maintenance contracts and scheduling. This is a director-type position. We actually mimicked the responsibilities similar to the purchase manager, where I think it's written as it reports to me technically, but it can be designated downward. Oswego, they've already designated the purchasing manager to the assistant administrator. So this one may actually end up in like public works or parks, depending on where that goes, just from a day-to-day basis. But the idea is somebody that can set the system in place to follow our facility maintenance report and other things that get submitted to create a system to then go out and have those things done, either through contracting, if there's in-house resources to be able to do it, and then to just keep track of it, and hopefully get us to a point where we're spending a bunch of money that we somehow identify as buildings strategically, both from a safety perspective, but then also to prevent maintenance to prevent issues. So the purchasing manager, in my mind, was easy to justify because of the cost savings associated with the position. This one, there won't be a cost savings. Down the road, there might be a percentage because you're doing things earlier and saving yourself some money.
Maintenance and those obligations that we're making.
But the idea is this person is going to hopefully have a decent budget at some point or another, and they're just going to get a whole bunch of stuff done better than we would be able to do in-house. So that's the concept behind it. Originally, it was proposed to be three ways. Montgomery initially told us they would do it, and then they got in front of their budget approval, and then they pulled it out. So they don't want to participate with us, I guess, some shared employees at this time, which is fine. And so it's just us and us, so we go. Because we've waited so long, the budget impact this year is not a big deal. Next year, it's probably going to be $10,000 to $15,000 more than we had budgeted, which isn't a material dollar amount in my mind. We have no idea, similar to the purchasing manager, if we're going to find somebody, if we're going to have a good pool of candidates or not. We think that we've positioned ourselves externally to be pretty competitive in hopes of maybe giving somebody that's already done this in a large municipality, wants to set this up, and then kind of serve the model for, you know, a whole bunch of work in the future. And we'll see what we get. So there is still a possibility after we approve it that it may get pushed off, just because I think we're a little bit more uncertain than we were with the purchasing manager. But the intergovernmental agreement and job description approval are in here, and if you approve those, then we would intend to move forward with both of them and see if we can hire it. So this is the time to have the conversation, and if anything has changed the last budget proposal, let me know, and we can talk about it.
Any comments or questions on this?
How much are you looking to pay him?
The salary was, I think it was 80 to 90, if I remember correctly.
That'd be about right.
Oh,
I just don't see it.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's not in there. Because Oswego uses title-based salary ranges. They don't do numbers like we do.
Right, because it's based on one class.
Like 80 to 90, though.
We posted the purchasing manager, I think it's 75 to like 93, and hired at 85, and I believe we were looking at the same type of person. So somebody that's like a pseudo department head that's going to be a manager or a chief for these systems, and not necessarily the guy that's like, oh, this door needs to be fixed, I'm just going to run out and do it. You know, somebody that invests in the system in place.
This person is not going to be, as you just said, this person is not going to be necessarily doing the work,
correct,
but is going to just manage. So this person has the capability of directing the staff.
Correct.
Or contract staff.
Correct.
How do we get into solving issues of this person is a director, department head under Oswego, but directing Yorkville staff that are under Public Works for Public Works maintenance projects?
Sure.
How do we coordinate that to deal with Eric on that, since we're taking away responsibilities or shifting staff?
So the easy answer is that they will probably be reporting to Eric and Jen Hughes on a day-to-day basis. That's probably what's going to happen. We have to work out that type of system depending on what the person's strengths are and how much each municipality thinks that they're going to dedicate to their work in-house. So Oswego has like four or five handy type people that their initial comment was like, we definitely want another Jen because we're going to do as much as we can in-house. And it's going to be a lot of little things here and there because they have newer facilities than we do, too. Whereas with us, we have a few people that are handy, but since we're, in my mind, a little bit shorter staffed, I would prefer to keep those people out doing public works facility things and have them look at, purchasing contracts through the purchasing manager to do work. So based on whatever amount of money we can give them, let's prioritize it based on safety, value, and then, you know, bid those things out. So it may end up being that it reports to Jen in Oswego because, you know, she wants to be able to dedicate people in-house, whereas here it might just be like, you know, we're just going to bid it out, and so I want you to just create the process to do so.
So it's something that on a weekly basis or bi-weekly, this person is reporting to the two directors of Public Works?
Probably, yeah.
Coordinating, these are the needs.
Yep.
So, just to be clear, this may not necessarily be a director position. position, it may be a manager.
Yes.
Because I just want to make sure where this is falling into the ranks. It's not someone, it's not a purchasing manager like Ann is. She's running all purchasing and managing all of that on her own, not answering to anybody except yourself. Well, I guess to the assistant administrator, yeah. Across Rio.
It would be... So I would describe it as somebody who's on par with Annie as being able to make decisions and set the processes in place and marshal resources to be able to do the things. And so it'll be different because in Oswego, if it's reporting to the director of public works, it's a different level on the hierarchy.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it's like the same role and responsibility of like nobody else in the city is going to do building and maintenance type issues. Scheduling, contracting, so figure it out, let's map it all out, talk about budgets, you know, capital impact, and then, you know, we're going to set you in place under Jen, that way Jen is reviewing what they're doing in Oswego, and maybe it's, we're, you know, doing the same thing with Eric here, like, you know, you cannot, you know, have somebody go out and fix the doors this week because we're doing sewer jetting or leaf pickup or something like that, but if we don't have anybody in-house doing it, then, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense. So that's something that we have to figure out depending on the person. And, you know, some of it will be a learning experience.
And that's what I just want to try to get my mind around is director position answering to two directors somewhat. And that's atypical. And then this director has the ability to direct staff as long as the public works directors are okay with that on the schedule.
Yep.
That's where I guess I want to make sure that the directives are correct from the public works directors themselves, that they're everything is good, that this person does have the authority to deal with staff, push that out, and it doesn't step on toes on either side.
Yeah.
You know, because when I read through the description, my initial thought was, okay, Eric's going to be doing a lot less in terms of managing these elements, which is not a bad thing, because as you said, we're short staffed. But you put someone of this level directly under him, that I think could create some issues in terms of who's managing who, or who in terms of staffing.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to come down to the low man on the pole. They're going to be a pain in the
pole. Exactly. So it's kind of I see there could be some issues there. I definitely see there's benefits to this. We've talked about this, why we want to do this, but I guess it's going to be in the details of our agreement, how everything falls together in terms of managing the operations day to day. And that's kind of an issue that we'll get to, I guess, with our agreement. This person will have the ability to expend funds.
Yes.
Budgeted funds only.
Yes.
And that's on both sides. Now, does this fall under public works budget line items, or does this, how do we think this is going to, how far will this scope of funds extend? So if we're given, is it just one budget line item, like public works, or is it life safety type thing? How do we categorize it?
To be determined, and especially on our end. I mean, our main building maintenance line items are the citywide capital.
Yeah.
But there is some in, like, water and sewer, and each one of the, there's
so
parks,
this person's
TIF
budget.
Stuff.
This person's budget could be, you know, if it's $1 million, it could be out of 3-4 different pots.
Some of that will be just managing it from like a month-to-month basis and saying, like, here are the line items and projects that we've contemplated in the budget that I would like you to focus on this year and do. And, you know, I'm giving you the authority basically to, you know, as long as you're within the project estimates to do it. And then if not, you've got to get, you know, authority from me or Aaron or Eric, whoever it ends up being.
Okay. And then regular updates, I would take it, come back to various committees?
Yes. So the purchasing manager, I think we pledged semi-annually. There will be one in the budget proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say something similar here. With building and maintenance stuff, there's more of a budget component because it's going to be a lot of little projects. So it might be public works, might be parks and rec. You know, just depending on what the individual project is. So that'll have to be figured out, too, depending on the actual workload.
I was going to say, I could see this person attending a public works meeting or admin, depending on if we're going through these types of projects that we have later in here for the
building condition report.
Yep. Yeah, for those there, budget discussions and then projects, you know, so the occasional meetings.
Quite a few per month.
Yeah, not a regular attendee to the meetings, but no. Depending on what the agenda is, I would see that be beneficial to us.
I agree.
And that's got to be a known function of their employment, which I... Yeah, it attends staff and governing board meetings.
As required. So it's just up to the managers on each side to make sure that they're at the meetings they need to be.
That they need to be, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I think it's good. Now, proportionately, 50-50 split. How do we feel about that?
I got an interesting anecdote here for you. So, the purchasing manager has set up 50-50 split. That'll be part of the report, just on, like, if they think they spent more time here or there that we're supposed to be doing it. And from what I can tell, even though the proportion benefit, because they're building the giant police station, saving hundreds of thousands of dollars on interest payments, are towards Oswego, the actual time spent is probably about equal. So I don't see that there will be much of an issue there. Our IT contract, which sets it up 80-20, so they're supposed to spend 32 hours in Oswego and 8 hours here, has actually been like 48% Oswego, 52% Yorkville. So,
but we're doing a major upgrade.
We're in the way outside the realm of, like, okay, this thing is going to get turned around. So my guess is in the next few months we'll probably just look to, you know, pay
switch
them out. Yeah,
out.
Yeah. So, so here we'll set it at 50-50. And, you know, in my mind, it's up to the aggrieved party to raise it as an issue and to negotiate it on a one-to-one basis. So, you know, Oswego, since they noticed the IT guy hasn't been there as often as he should be, you know, is raising it. It's like, you know, this is...
Do we know how many total facilities they have? I know of their primary buildings, but in terms of public works buildings, the well buildings, those kind of things...
I don't know that they put together a list for it.
Well, I think it's going to be different because you got to remember that then their library isn't going to be covered.
Right, well, the libraries are separate.
Right, and so is their parks.
It's Village Hall. It's their maintenance building, the public works building. They have, I know they have, what, 3 water towers.
Yeah.
So each of those have pump, and then they have several wells.
Right.
Right.
They don't have parks.
Right. Yeah, they have no parks.
So they don't have park shelters.
They have no... Yeah, no shelters. They have no library facilities.
They don't have an old jail. I mean,
they have a. They have the old police facility, the current one, which.
That's an old jail.
As soon as they move into the new one,
yeah,
that one potentially is going to shift off of their roles, their maintenance roles. So, what are their obligations? That's kind of what I'm looking at. Is
yeah, I mean,
and that's where I know we will rectify this once we go a little bit down the road. But
I would look to the person and say, you know, is there a list? Put together the fleet. Let's figure it out. Start spending your time on, you know, where your time can best be spent, and then, you know, map it out from there. So,
and as you said, Joe, I think in the initial, it's a windfall. Probably looking at our list, but.
Right.
I mean, but they have some bigger buildings.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get a
70,000 square feet for the police facility. They've got, you know, 35,000 for the public or Village Hall. Their buildings are not small.
No.
But who knows?
Yeah.
They're newer. Much. Okay.
So we're good with that? Should we consent agenda that? Or?
Yeah, I'm okay with consent. Would
it be okay to consent on that? Okay, number 8, admin 2017-86, 2017 bond abatement ordinances. There's 8 of them.
Let's go through one at a time and talk about each one.
Well, if you'd like to, Chris, so we can start.
Rob was like, probably just...
Rob's like,
I'm chomping at the bit, but...
Yeah.
Just to briefly summarize, this is the annual bond abatements. It's the second year in a row that we're going to fully abate all of our alternate revenue source bonds. They will not appear on the property tax bills. If you look at PDF page 206, you can see a little bit of history regarding our abatement processes over the last... you know, 6-8 levy cycles. Back in 2010, we actually had $2.2 million actually on the property tax rolls. Since then, it's been drastically declined. It went down 67% the next year, 32%, and now we're at zero, and we plan to keep it there, and it's 2 years in a row now. So.
Comments, questions on any of these eight?
No.
Good
job.
Can we do those on the consent agenda?
You should read that. Because that's what I was going to say. If it's not on consent, that is a long.
Okay, right. Hungry. And that pulls it off. It's going to have to.
Well, and then two.
I was going to read it.
Because there won't be a prepared motion either.
Yeah. Well, that I can do. That I can handle. 9, admin 2017-87, 2017 SSA abatement ordinances. And there's 5 of those. They are for Raintree, Wyndette, Central Grand Reserve, Raintree Village 2, and Bottom Creek Project and the Bristol Bay 1 Project.
These, again, are just our annual partial abatements for the various SSAs. An administration or an admin report has been attached for all the SSAs prepared by David Tossing and Associates, who are our SSA consultant, and they're the ones who come up with the numbers to what needs to be abated and what needs to be actually sent out as property tax for the SSAs. For the most part, most of them aren't changing too much. Autumn Creek and Bristol Bay are relatively the same as they were last year. Raintree Village 2 is about a 1.5% increase. The Grand Reserve SSA has actually gone down a little over 1%. Wyndette Ridge, again, about a 1.4% increase. And probably the largest increase is, of course, Raintree Village, looking at about a 3.4% increase. But you know, there's a chart attached for each one of the SSAs, along with the abatement and the admin report.
Comments or questions on these?
In the Raintree, that's, you know, it kind of jumps out that increase that is based on their actuarials, that's what it needs to increase to?
Well, it's not so much actuarial based, it's more debt service based. But yeah, that's what they need in order to fund.
And that's because I know we've had some reserve prior year, but that's being utilized, and this year there's going to be a lower, virtually nothing on that once it's done. So we're paying off what's due, and then it's going to kind of hold its balance closer to a zero. Or is it actually holding a $600,000 reserve still on Raintree?
It's probably identified in the covenant as to what their reserve balance should be. Yeah. So I would assume that these property tax numbers would fund debt service and also maintain.
They have to maintain that. They can't draw that down unless there's a catastrophic issue there. And Raintree's done, is that being paid by the bank? Or are those individual parcels?
So, and I don't know if this is, there's SSA 1 in Raintree. And I don't know if that's the 2003-100.
I can't keep them straight.
Which one? This is the SSA 1 because the majority of the finished area. So this one, because the levied amounts are less than the maximum, is the subdivision that's generally complete. And so the fluctuation from year to year is based on maybe somebody didn't pay or maybe the debt service jumps, like Rob said. The one that is at the maximum is that southern section, which is Unit 2, which is only like 10% built. Mm-hmm. And that's the one where I think they are drawing on the reserve because the debt service amounts have not been, not been met the past few years. Or close to not being met. I don't remember what exactly the event horizon was there, but the bondholders are aware of it. They've been talking about it for months, years.
I was going to say, if they continue to draw and not pay up front on those, that's cost more.
The developer-owned parcels have not paid their property taxes in several years. So that has not changed. And that's the reason why the second SSA unit has been short.
Is that Rialto that still owns it?
It is, yeah. It's two or three different LLCs. So
they're combined on that.
Correct. Yeah. So, and I don't know if anybody saw, but Lennar is buying Cal Atlantic. So that's the subdivision, that's the owner of the Wyndham Ridge subdivision. So they're creating one of the largest home builders in the country. So we're optimistic that maybe that means they're back in growth mode and ready to move. But they haven't given us any indication of that. So we'll see.
Okay, so we're good on those? Consent agenda?
Sure.
Okay. 10, admin 2017-88. It's the ordinance for the amended levy and assessment of taxes for the fiscal year beginning May 1st, 2018 and ending April 30th, 2019 in and for the United City of Iroquois Special Service Area, number 2004-201 for Fox Hill.
Again, this is the annual tax levy for the Fox Hill SSA. This year, staff's recommending a $18 increase, so per pin it would go from $42.38 to $60.55. If you look at Exhibit B, kind of gives you a pro forma budget report through 2025, which is the end of the 10-year payback period for both the Fox Hill and the Sunflower SSA that we'll get to in a minute. You can see at the end of fiscal year 2017 that fund balance is positive. Of course, there's a bit of artificial inflation because if you look under the revenues, under sale of capital assets, we did dispose of the original entrance sign out there on 34, so that's $22,000 coming in. That money will go out in 2020 when that sign's replaced. And you can see at the end of fiscal year 2020, it's projected that fund balance will once again be negative for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years before getting positive again. You know, we're targeting a 25% fund balance, so it'll give them a little over $3,000 that they can use, you know, for discretionary expenditures or if something anticipated comes up, you know, they'll have a little bit of reserve to address any potential issues.
Comments or questions?
Long term, the rate that this one is going to be at for their assessment, a couple of years ago they were at $15, then they went up just slightly, I think, to 17, and then we did the big jump because we did the maintenance. Do we anticipate that going back down at all? Once we get it back down, or do we anticipate this staying up at the $60 in perpetuity?
So the way we have it shown in the budget report is that it would be $60 in perpetuity, and we reanalyze that each year on a rolling basis based on the maintenance costs and whatever capital projects we have. So within this, what is this, an 8-year, 7-year budget report, or budget projection from Rob, we don't have seal coating in there and some other things that when we do our budget proposal, we are starting to plug those things in. So this is like you've kind of got like two analyses that are running somewhat overlapping. And so the recommendation just for this year is to just get it to 60 and then to reevaluate the time of to budget for next year.
And one thing, can we look at this? I know we're looking at this out to 2025. Get it a little further. Because this one, these trails are private. They're going to have to be replaced or seal-coated again. So right now we're looking at continuing maintenance, but debt, or basically a debt that we're paying back over time because we did the trails. Can we look at it in the longer term of, okay, to keep a 25% reserve in perpetuity, what's that number going to have to be looking out a little bit further? Because once we pay back this and we continue to do need-based maintenance of the trees that are going to be replaced, the trails, those types of things, what are we going to... I'm sorry, I'm not talking trails. This is...
No, you are.
Yeah,
right.
Sorry. I just want to see, make sure that what we're projecting in the further, you know, once we come back around to these... Yeah, so... We don't have this fluctuation that goes from 17 to 42 to 60 to, you know, 90 to 100. You know, we're looking at, what is it, 42% increase this year? I mean, this is not a big dollar amount. I'm surprised we're still so low, but right. I just wanted to find a balance that keeps the reserve in this account for the large expenditures so that they don't have to do a correction every, you know, 5-10 years.
Understood. We talked about that in our department in meeting for the budget, so I would anticipate that that type of a long-term look would be for next year's levy.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions on this? Consent agenda? Good. 11, admin 2017-89, ordinance for the amended levy and assessment of taxes, blah. This was for sunflower sakes. Same thing, sunflower sakes.
Right. Yeah, again, just a similar story. Instead of the trails this time, it deals with pond maintenance. We did naturalization of 3 detention basins in fiscal year 2016. You can see under pond maintenance, we spent over $26,000 that year, causing fund balance to go negative. Currently, it's about $15,000 in the red. But we're proposing that we increase each pin by $56, so it'll go from $115.21 to $171.30. And again, going forward, that'll eliminate the negative fund balance by 2025. And again, we just as with Fox Hill, we're shooting for a 25% reserve, which is about around $3,800 for the sunflower SSA.
And just to kind of piggyback on the last conversation, one of the reasons why it is going up in this year is the budgeting assumption that we used last year, budgeting and levying assumption, was that I think it was like a 10-year payback, but we were leaving both funds at 0% fund balance was the target.
Yeah.
And so now we've moved those goalposts to say by the end of the 10-year payback, we want a 25%. So that's something that if we take it out even farther, we build in a couple life cycle replacements for trails and naturalization and pond maintenance, that you can then smooth that out over a longer period of time. So that's what we'll look to do for the budget proposal in next year's levy.
Comments or questions on this one?
Honestly, I'd rather step this in. This is a 50% increase. I'd rather this be stepped over a few years to get to that target. You know, whether we do it over 2, 3, 4 years, but I'd rather step the increases instead of 50% this year. On the backside, it might be a little more expensive, but I'd rather, do an incremental increase as we go along instead of all at once right now. That'd be truly my preference on that one.
We got 30, 30, 30.
So I'd rather it step up a little more as you go through time.
Ease people into it?
Ease them into it. Because, this one had a significant jump just because we did that pond maintenance, which that was a big thing. The naturalization, that was to be expected, but they're not paying it all up front, and they didn't have a reserve, so I think to continue building the reserve and paying off the debt, step it into easing it. That's my preference.
Yes,
that makes sense.
Okay, with it if you
want. Okay, so how about we set it at?
I'd say 30%. Is that?
Well, I think I'd
I don't have to pay one, then I'm glad. But
so it'd be like a. Where are we moving between 117 and 115 to 171,
which is a 45 to $56 spread.
Divided by 3, it's going to be 18.
Do you actually have to divide it more than 3?
Well, it's
like 19.
I just did 15%. 50% over 3 years, that's 190. So it actually could be less. Compounding it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Somewhere between 115 and we'll call it 150, whatever the math works out to be. Mm-hmm. Everybody is okay with that. We'll put that in the ordinance. So probably like in the 130, 140 this year, and then like 150 the following year, and then 170 or whatever it needs
to
be.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
And we'll put it up on the pack that explains.
Okay.
The
last
strategy. I'll get it done.
Okay.
Yeah, that I appreciate that one.
Okay.
Do you want that one on consent, though, with that memo or no? Okay.
Okay, for regular. You make me read it, huh?
Sorry.
That's a short one. Okay, so then we go to our old business, Edmund 2017-70, our building condition survey results.
Yeah, and I'm not going to read off the entire PowerPoint that we put in there. We did pick the City Hall and Tower Lane facility just to give you an idea in the same format as last time what the needs are in general. I mean, with Game Farm Road, this roof is going to need to be replaced. You're going to need a fair amount of HVAC upgrades in the next few years. You've got some exterior light pole issues, and there's some photos of that. So this was one of the buildings that I think we were up in the air on as to whether we would say, depending on our long-term use of this building, you know, should we be doing non-essential repairs and improvements to this building? And so I think we were split at a staff level. So some of us said, well, depending on what happens with 102 East Van Emmon and that timeline, it doesn't make sense to do a lot of things. But the roof, I mean, you're going to have to do that whenever it gets to a point where it's bad enough.
Right.
But maybe exterior parking lots. What's that?
Get a big blue tarp.
Right.
That's true.
We can give everybody an umbrella.
I'm selling them.
That's going to save quite a bit.
Do we already have a water leak, I see?
It would appear so, yes. And then with 610 Tower Lane, I mean, the entire building just has hundreds of thousands of dollars, sprinkler issues, fire alarm issues that are safety. I mean, roof, if you look at the building on the side of it, I mean, it's deteriorating. I don't know that it's structurally unsound, but it's not, you know, something that you would
look proud of
long term. Yes. And just given the size of the facility, it's something that we've, you know, always kind of just said defer as much as possible to figure out what we're doing between the two other sides, the one adjacent site, so the two sites together. So, that's something that, you know, the recommendation was do not maintain unless we have to. And so I know that that was a bit of a point of discussion at the last meeting.
Do we have any idea how much longer, any kind of sort of idea how much longer we're going to use this building as City Hall?
Any kind of, I would say your earliest scenario is probably 5 to 7 years. Like if you said next year we're going to do this space needs plan and it goes smoothly and then you're like, oh gosh, we got a whole bunch of money and we're going to go build out this other thing, that's going to be 3 or 4 years. And then you've got moving and development and all those other things. So that's why, like, with a roof, I mean, like, if there's a point where that keeps occurring and we're, you know, jeopardizing our asset, we'll go and fix those things. But maybe then it is a conversation of, like, can we patch a portion of the roof or can we tarp it, make it look nice or something? Or, you know, is it so far off that it...
Tarps never look nice, Bart. I'm sorry.
No tarps.
Architecturally significant tarps, I think, like, get a nice color out of it or something. So we just wanted to go through and give you an opportunity to talk about these things. The same material is going to be in the public works packet for next week too.
My take on both: life safety and security
only.
Okay. I mean that applies more security here.
Right.
You know, we've got some doors that need to be replaced. Yes. This type of thing, maybe a camera, but only improvements for those purposes. Life safety is okay. Do we want mold growing in our attic space?
I would think
the roof.
Basic
should be done. It's just protecting. You'd fix it at your house.
Look at it in the aspect of can we patch it or does the whole thing need to be replaced?
Yeah. Well, it's the original roof from the building's what.
Yeah.
But I mean that's not necessarily.
Years.
They might not have to rip it off.
Right.
Well, probably just sections of it, just like they do your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have areas that need to be taken off, patched, repaired, and then you do an overlay for the whole thing.
Right.
Probably what they're... Is not that... I mean, we're at the life expectancy.
Right. Yeah.
It's
going to be 20 years.
Because if this one was 20 years, the life expectancy of those shingles at the time was probably a 20-year warranty. Yeah. Not like the 30-year, 40-years now.
Yeah.
So, and... I'm pretty certain the standard of material we used here was not the highest quality.
No.
So, and then Tower Lane.
No.
I know we have a bulldozer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you do that with Tower Lane, are you looking to put something back up on that with the new spot? Is that
something?
Is that our,
what it looks like, I don't know.
Like the same type? Is that, was that like a Morton building?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on what we're comfortable with from an aesthetic standard, what we can afford. So that'll be part of the first step is figuring out how big we need it and where we want that type of a building, if there are better options than making those types of decisions after that.
I think this is a great opportunity to put together the RFP for demolition of the shed building. I don't know if we want to take down the house. But demolition of the shed and our the whole building and request for proposals for demo, salvage, and new building.
Yeah.
Well, they need a bigger one, don't they?
Exactly. So if you start making room for it, I honestly think the house doesn't have a great application for us right now.
No.
Other than office space, but you still have to do improvements to it.
Yeah, because you have to make an ADA.
So why not take all three of them?
There were a few historical things that like different modelers might want to use.
The wood,
I'm gonna abstain from that house.
Some of those kind of things. Yeah, I mean, we know that house has age to it. I mean, even just the lumber, the trusses, and the wrap. If you go
do
up,
know when it was built?
What's that?
Do we know when it was built?
Yeah, it's in the report. It's like 1902 or something like that. It's like 100.
So I mean, there's
it's new though.
It's new, but that material, the actual frame in that thing, that's going to have some quality to it.
Good luck pounding a nail into it, too.
And that's where...
there's people that buy those in windows.
If they do that gives us an opportunity. Okay, well, maybe we're $10,000, $20,000 that goes towards a new building.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, if we're demoing and they're salvaging the three buildings, because one's going to be metal. And,
even the barn, that will like that one.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that.
I don't remember
who. Yeah, no, I'd get 20 bucks a foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, those kind of, I think that's a way to approach how would we start our discussion on a new building for Public Works?
Clear the campus.
Yeah.
The only issue I could see is running into something like that is usually like big reputable salvage companies aren't the guys that want the siding, you know.
And it's probably not going to be that. We're going to get someone smaller, which, honestly, I'd be okay with that. And even if they strip it, and then they say, okay, we're going to subcontract for a demo company.
I'm just thinking safety and liability is the only concern I would have.
As long as, we're covered if we have a good agreement in place.
Because it would be like me and my dad wanting.
Right, if you guys, you could put together a proposal and say, hey, I want it, and I'm going to scrap it, and then I'm going to contract somebody to tear the rest of it down and haul it away.
I mean, for us, we took our barn down. We gave it away because it saved us. Just for them to haul it away for the dumpster cost of it.
Hey, I just took a building down and put it back up.
Yeah. It's going to be costly for us to... contract someone to come and do it.
There were enough people that, I had someone come take the whole side, one wall of the siding down to use it up the family room. It's on the application. Hey, I don't have to dispose of it. You're not putting it in a landfill. You're just getting recycled. Yeah.
And write in the contract that they need to put up the 8-foot fence so we can't see anything inside when they tear it down. So we have no knowledge of what's on the side.
Plausible deniability.
Plausible deniability of anything they find.
Right.
I know.
Okay, so we'll further discuss that next week.
Yeah.
Okay,
does everybody want to keep going through these, or do you want to just kind of let it sit? Okay.
I think that's personal.
Yeah.
At least we're digesting. We could have done three tonight.
Look at that.
But your iPad.
My iPad. So, do we have any additional business? Okay, it's 6:53. Let's adjourn.